Movie reviews here on WGN. Our phone number, if you have questions or comments, is 312-981-7200. Colin Suter, Eric Childress from eFilmCritic.com join me every Saturday. Colin, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And Eric, welcome.
Hello.
How you guys been?
Good.
Okay.
All right, cool, man. All right, we got some stuff to talk about tonight. So let's see. First of all, let's do the on-demand stuff. There's only three of them this week. Which is really, yeah. It's really unusual because normally there's more than that.
The last week of the year or last week of the month, and not a lot in the theaters this week too. So I don't know. Maybe they're just following suit.
Okay. All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about it. The first on demand movie is Hit by Lightning.
Hit by Lightning, and this one stars TV's John Cryer as Ricky Miller, a single, quiet 40-year-old aspiring writer and manager of Debbie's. And associated parentheses, think Denny's. And probably the last person you notice in a crowd is hit by lightning, quote-unquote, and meets the love of his life, the beautiful Danita, on ehappily.com. Uh-huh. Is Catapulton's relationship online. But it's a lot more than he's bargained for. This includes being asked to kill.
Wow.
So there you go.
All right. Did you guys know that on Two and a Half Men this past week that he dressed as Ducky?
I saw the preview for that.
I don't know.
Did you pull it off?
I didn't see it. I don't watch that show, but okay. I saw the commercials.
I've never seen that show in my life.
Yeah, I don't watch that show, but I thought it was actually kind of funny that because I was watching the commercials for it, and I was like, oh my God, he's wearing a Ducky costume. And so are they going to like meld the two worlds?
He doesn't have that kind of hair anymore, does he? I mean, I'm assuming he put a wig on.
He did put a wig on, I would imagine, because he looked exactly like he did.
Exactly. It's like 1986 all over again.
Yeah, I'm not kidding. He looked exactly like him.
It still wasn't as cool as when Nathan Fillion dressed up as his brown coat character on Castle.
Yeah, see, now that I thought, you know, I
that
don't.
That was cool.
I thought that was pretty cool. I didn't know that. You know, we were talking about that because last week we were talking about Halloween episodes of TV, you know, the best Halloween episodes, and someone texted in with that one. And said it was awesome that he dressed up like his character from Firefly. And I was like, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. Okay, next is a movie called Magical Universe.
Yeah, and this is a documentary about documentarian strikes up a friendship with reclusive artist Al Carby, whose Barbie doll photography gains acclaim and interest over the course of this project's 10-year history. And the director of the documentary is Jeremy Workman, who is actually the son of Chuck Workman.
Oh. You know, Chuck Workman's got a documentary coming out about Orson Welles.
Yeah, Magician.
Yeah, I can't wait to see that.
Yeah, that looks like it could be very cool.
All right, so this is directed by Chuck Workman's son.
Mm-hmm.
It is also a documentary. Okay, all right, and that's available on demand. And the last one is called Missionary. What do we got there?
Yes, this is not a remake of the Christopher Reeve film. Catherine is a struggling mother trying to create a better life for her. I'm sorry, that's Monsignor. Never mind.
Yeah, Monsignor was a Christian.
Missionary, that's Michael Palin, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Okay. I get my Monsignor movies mixed up. But Catherine is a struggling mother trying to create a better life for her and her son. She meets Elder Brock, a handsome Mormon missionary with a troubled past, and they begin an incendiary love affair. But when Catherine reunites with her estranged husband, Elder Brock can't accept that things are over and he will stop at nothing to prove to her that they are meant to be together forever.
All right. And there's nobody really names in it.
Nope.
Okay. So there you go. Those are your options for on demand. They're not many.
Nope.
Many.
Nobody's demanding anything.
No, that's right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. All right. Movie theaters, stuff that we've got that are opening. Eric, you're the only one that's seen it, so tell us about Citizen 4.
Oh, okay. Citizen 4, this is a story. The documentary, a filmmaker named Laura Poitras, hope I'm saying that right. And she's made a couple of documentaries, some PBS things, about sort of post-9/11 America and sort of what's happened to us, sort of our laws and our restrictions, and particularly what's happened to immigrants coming to this country. And her first film, called My Country, My Country, as the documentary unfolds or opens, she tells us that after that documentary, she was actually placed on a government watch list and actually sort of helped or hurt restrict her travel as she went on to make other films. And as she started to make this new film, which was also going to be about post 9/11 America, she gets contacted by a mysterious guy online who wants to meet her and says he has some valuable information for her. Turns out that this guy is Edward Snowden. Uh-huh. Now, this is not Snowden meeting up with her now. This is not Snowden in exile. This is Edward Snowden before he leaked the documents. This is literally a documentary that unfolds practically in real time, leading up to the events of when Edward Snowden leaked the NSA documents.
Whoa.
Yes. So you have a good portion of this documentary is in the hotel room with Edward Snowden, face-to-face with not just the documentary filmmaker, Laura, but also Glenn Greenwald, who broke the story, who broke this entire story. So we're watching them sort of hash out exactly what information they're going to leak, what information is not going to be leaked because it could harm Americans across the world, and the value of it and the danger of it. And this movie plays like absolutely a real-life thriller. We're watching this whole thing unfold in real time, and this movie, many times throughout, and it's even spoken, the words spoken by President Obama, said that, you know, no matter what you think of Edward Snowden, good or bad, you know, hero or villain, that if you want to have the debate, this is a good place to start. Well, that's what this movie is. This is an absolutely riveting, true-to-life documentary where it's not taking positions, it's not about talking heads, telling you what to feel about Edward Snowden or anything that happened afterwards. This is just a point of view of, fact-based, right in your face account of how this whole thing transpired. And it's one of the most riveting documentaries I've seen in some time. It's one of the best movies of the year.
Wow.
Absolutely, people need to see Citizen Four if they want to have the debate. If they just want to, not listen to anything, that's fine. But if you want to be part of the debate, you have to see this movie.
All right. It's only playing in three theaters. It's at the River East down here, the Landmark Century Center Cinema on Clark, and the Century 12 in Evanston. So, Citizen Four. All right. Sounds good. Sounds real good. Colin, I'm assuming you're probably going to want to see this.
Definitely. Maybe tomorrow.
Yeah. Wow. Sounds great. Yeah. Okay. We'll take a quick break, guys. Hang on a second. And Colin and Eric are here, and we will continue to review movies. So far, so good. Citizen Four, one of the best documentaries of the year, according to Eric. We'll take a quick break here on 720 WGN. More movie reviews coming up. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Showcase Studios here, Allstate Showcase Studio, here till midnight and doing movie reviews right now. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Colin and Eric join me every week for movie reviews. Welcome back, guys.
Hey.
All right, Colin, why don't you tell us about Before I Go to Sleep?
All right. Well, this is the thriller with Nicole Kidman as a woman who wakes up every morning and cannot remember her life. She has a permanent form of amnesia every day. So she wakes up and finds Colin Firth in her bed, and he has to inform her of her condition seemingly every day, and leaves out a list of things for her to know about herself and things to do throughout the day. And she also gets a call from a strange doctor played by Mark Strong. And he tells her a lot more about her life and how things may not be what they seem. As the movie progresses, she figures out, you know, what her life was like, you know, years ago, and, you know, what happened with her marriage and everything. And there's all kinds of MacGuffins throughout this thing that I probably shouldn't even mention that much more about it. Not that it matters, because as Eric was talking about with Citizen Four being a real life, honest to God thriller, this is as unreal life a fake thriller as you can imagine. It's appropriate that, you know, Nicole Kidman wakes up every day with a blank slate, because that's pretty much what all these characters are. They're really not characters. They're all just a bunch of plot devices walking around. And if you've seen not even just Hitchcock, but any just typical thriller with twists and turns and things not being what they seem, you'll be able to spot pretty early on all the twists and turns coming and who isn't what they seem and all the red herrings and all of that, leading up to a climax that really isn't as emotional as the director would like it to be, because we figured everything out already. So this is really just an unfortunate step backwards for a lot of talented people here. I mean, Nicole Kidman and Colin Firth, they deserve better scripts than this. And it's kind of unfortunate to see them kind of wallowing in what is, you know, a very generic film, a very generic mystery with no real surprises to it. So if you're, you know, looking for a thriller about an amnesiac, stick with Memento, because this just isn't good.
All right. And I haven't seen it. So, Eric, what about you?
Yeah, this is one of the most idiotically conceived thrillers in some time. I mean, Memento obviously is kind of the gold standard in this realm. There have been a lot of movies that have dealt with the sort of the forgetful.
This sounds like a serious version of 51st Dates.
51st Dates or Clean Slate with Dana Carvey.
Oh yeah, Clean Slate.
You know, like this movie is a thriller based on comedies, basically. and you know, as movies go, as you know, as mysteries go, whatever the central mystery of this movie might be, the film didn't, you know, solve its biggest problem is that in order to have, you know, to even really have red herrings, you really should have more than two suspects in your entire movie. I'm pretty sure that this film is actually an adaptation of the short story that Danny DeVito did in Throw Mama from the Train, the guy in the hat killed the other guy in the hat. Because, I mean, there's really, it's either Colin Firth or Mark Strong is the bad guy. And if the movie had any, you know, sense of surprise in it, that it would be neither or both. But it isn't. It's just, it's so stupid. And the more you sort of backtrack once this, all the sort of the big twist in the movie is revealed, the dumber the movie gets. I mean, to me, you know, I walked out of the movie and I'm thinking like, well, Nicole Kidman must be really great in the sack, her character. And yet when you find out what all the twists are in the movie, even that doesn't even make any sense. So, no, this movie should be avoided at all costs unless you want to have some big unintentional laughs. But there are even better ones than that to see than this one.
Okay. Before I go to sleep, not recommended. Okay. Let's see. I'm gonna review. Neither of you have saw Harmontown?
No.
Okay.
Nope.
I did, and this is a documentary where they follow Dan Harmon, the creator of Community, where they follow Dan Harmon around on this tour that he did. Where he would do live podcasts, and he has a huge cult following, and it follows him around on this tour. And he's an interesting guy, a very funny guy, and a pretty brilliant guy. And he is become a hero to the outsider. You know what I mean? He's like the spokesman for geeks. If anybody watched Community, you can see that just by the way it's structured, and the way he writes. So he's got an army of geeks who follow him around. And this movie is about that world and about Dan Harmon. I thought it was terrific. I think it's a good documentary. I happen to be – I think it helps to be a big fan of Community to get, you know, that Harmon sensibility. But he's really funny live, and he does some crazy stuff. The documentary is well done. It's just a simple documentary. It's just basically them following this tour around from city to city. I guess your enjoyment of the movie will depend on how much you're interested in Dan Harmon. He does play a couple of voicemails from Chevy Chase. I don't know if you guys are aware of this, but Chevy Chase and Dan Harmon had a very volatile relationship. And Chevy Chase would leave some really vile and nasty messages on his phone, and Harmon plays them into the microphone, and it's really hilarious to see that.
I've heard a couple of those messages.
It's so funny.
Yeah.
And but it's mostly about the relationship that he has with his fans, and that he represents these outsiders and these geeks and the nerds of the world, and he's kind of their hero. And that's essentially what the movie is about, and it features everybody from Community is in it, you know, as talking heads and stuff like that. I thought it was really great. And they play Dungeons and Dragons at every podcast, and they have a dungeon master who's like this 22-year-old dude with a beard, who still lives at home with his mom, and he's become like a star now. Like, people love him. He's the dungeon master at every podcast, and people just love this guy. And he's one of the most interesting characters in the movie as well. So it's populated with really interesting people. It has a kind of a nice, fun message. And if you're a fan of Community, I highly, highly recommend it. It's called Harmontown. I don't even – what theater is it playing at? Do we know?
I think it's at the Music Box.
Music Box. Okay. I would recommend it. I saw it on Netflix, though. So it's already on Netflix, but I recommend it. All right, you guys, hang on, okay?
Okay.
All right, we got to catch up on some old movies, and then we'll tell you what we think of Nightcrawler, which will be coming up after the news. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. Here till midnight, and then lovely Amy Guth will come in with Red Eye Remix. 312-981-7200. We're going to be catching up on some of the movies from a couple of weeks ago as well, since this is the first Saturday that we've been on in a few weeks. But we got a couple of more movies that we're going to talk about that opened up this weekend. We got Colin Suter and Eric Childress. Welcome back, guys.
Hey, you.
I did see Horns. And I was very disappointed with it, you know, this is the new Daniel Radcliffe movie where he wakes up one morning and he's got horns growing out of his head and he's accused of murder. I just found it to be, you know, except for the horns in his head, it's pretty conventional.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing much going on. Colin, have you seen it?
No, not yet.
Yeah, I was really disappointed because I'm a fan of the director. I'm a big fan of the director. I really like Alexander Aja, but this was a misstep, I think, in his part. So it's also available on demand. It's in theaters. It's also available on demand, but I do not recommend it. I was pretty disappointed in it. But I think Radcliffe's good in it, though.
He is.
You know, it's a good performance, and he's a good actor, man. That guy's a good actor.
Mm-hmm.
So did you know that they made a sequel to The Woman in Black?
Yes.
No.
Yeah, he's not in it, though.
Coming out in January.
Comes out in, well, that's a good timing.
All right.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm not sure why, but they did. And so, okay. Well, Eric, you saw Nightcrawler. Which festival did you see it?
Toronto.
You saw it in Toronto. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So it's out now. This is the new Jake Gyllenhaal movie. Tell everybody about Nightcrawler.
Okay. Well, Jake Gyllenhaal plays a guy named Louis Bloom, who when we first meet him, we don't really know much about him. We just see him sort of trolling through the night landscape, basically sort of looking for work or anything he can sort of get his hands on to make a profit. And then he comes upon something that really does interest him. He comes upon an accident scene on the highway, and not just the carnage that is involved with it, but some news people or some camera people show up to film the accident and sell it to any local news station that would be interested in the footage. So he gets himself a cheap little camera and a police scanner, and he begins working his way into this lifestyle. People actually really do this for a living. They're referred to as night crawlers, and they go through the city streets looking for any sort of crime scene they can find. And he finds a news producer played by Rene Russo who is interested in the footage that he brings her. And next thing you know, he's sort of climbing his own ladder, if you will, and he gets himself an intern, and begins forming his own little company. And Louis Bloom's very, very interesting character. He's I guess sociopath is maybe putting too kind a word on him. He's definitely sort of in the mold of a few of De Niro's early work, Travis Bickle and Rupert Pupkin, and this is a guy that has clearly read more than a few self-help books and a few books on the art of negotiation. There's nothing that he can't talk his way into or out of. He always does so with a smile and this sort of creepy, body mass that Gyllenhaal lost some like 20, 25 pounds for this role. So he's very gaunt looking. He's very odd looking. And this is a very unique crime thriller. It builds, mostly around the personality of Gyllenhaal's character more than sort of the situations that he finds himself in. The commercials for the movie basically sort of giving away a lot of the stuff that's happening in the third act of this movie. And the movie builds beautifully, I think, up to the third act where there is a lot of real genuine tension. There's a terrific car chase towards the end, a lot of really great stuff in this movie that's anchored mostly by Gyllenhaal's performance. This movie might seem like it's going to be sort of a network-like satire of the media, but that's sort of the least interesting stuff in the movie. I think the movie is aware of how obvious it is, the whole if it bleeds, it leads mentality of news programs these days. And it would rather focus on the guy that would that delivers that footage rather than the people who pay for it. And I think it's a wise choice. Gyllenhaal gives, I think, one of the best performances of the year, arguably the best performance of his career. I think, at the very least, he's certainly the reason to see this movie. I really enjoyed it a lot.
Okay. Colin.
Yeah, I've actually seen this movie twice now. The first time I saw it, it rubbed me the wrong way. Something about it, like Eric was saying, about, the obviousness of a message about the media and manipulation and, how basically all media is corrupt seemed really just too obvious to be interesting for me at the time I saw it. I was also in a crappy mood when I first saw it, so... I think the movie does work better as a character study than as just as any kind of, lifting the veil off of, the media that we're consuming, whether it be TMZ or Fox News or CNN or whatever. It's sort of like, yeah, we know that we've been there already. But it did work better for me the second time when I saw it today. I wasn't expecting to see it again today, but I did. Really, Gyllenhaal's performance is really the reason to go see this film. It is genuinely creepy and unsettling. Even if I did find myself thinking, maybe this wedding business really isn't where the money's at. Maybe I should look into this line of work. This actually looks kind of interesting. This is definitely a performance piece, I think, more than an ideas piece. I think it kind of repeats itself a little bit too much. But if you want to see just an actor just, taking a role and making it his own, this is definitely a movie worth seeing for a great performance by a really great actor.
All right. I agree. I'm more with Eric on this one. I liked it a lot. You guys have both talked about Jake Gyllenhaal. He's amazing in this movie. And I agree with you, Eric. I think it's the best performance of his career. And he's given really great performances in the past. And but this is just genuinely unnerving. It's a really interesting character. The movie itself, like you guys are saying, it's not the most original thing in the world. And there've been a lot of films and a lot of TV shows and things that criticize the media. It's a pretty obvious point, but it's Gyllenhaal that makes this movie work, and it's Gyllenhaal that will freak you out. So there are scenes in this movie where he's like just genuinely creepy, it's always nice to see Bill Paxton in a movie. That's a plus.
Oh, yeah.
That's a plus. I dug this movie. I really liked it a lot. I think it's one of the more entertaining films I've seen all year. And I think Jake Gyllenhaal's performance, I think he's going to get nominated for this.
It's a crowded field.
Yeah.
It's a very crowded field. I think he needs a lot of help. Someone has to sort of really drop off late in the game, because I think there might be four spots locked up already.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
Okay. All right. Well, I think I think it's deserved. You know what I mean? If it wasn't
that
such
I agree with.
If it wasn't such a crowded field, I think he'd be a lock for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So, so there you go. Nightcrawler. It's out in theaters right now. It's doing well, isn't it?
Yeah, it's going to open number one this weekend.
Yeah, that's great.
Not a huge victory, but it's a small budget movie. It was only like an $8 million budget. So this film has a chance to turn a profit.
There you go. All right, cool. You guys hang on. We got movies to catch up on, okay?
All right.
Mm-hmm. Hold on a second. There's Eric. There's Colin. And they'll hang on, and we'll come back. It's 312-981-7200. We haven't been on for a couple of weeks, so we've got some movies that have been out that we are going to talk about. That's coming up. Yeah. Nick DiGilio here. Hi, everybody. We are live in the Allstate Showcase studio here till midnight. And then the lovely Amy Guth will be in for Red Eye Remix. And we'll have a full show next week and a full show the following week as well. And, we'll get some of our regular features back and some of our regular guests and all that cool stuff for your Saturday nights. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And since we haven't been on for a couple of weeks, we're going to play catch up here on some of the movies that have been out already. And Eric and Colin are here. Hi, guys.
Hello.
All right. Colin, tell us about Birdman.
All right. Well, this is what the heck is this guy's name again? Iñárritu. I forget.
It's Alejandro
González Iñárritu.
Thank you. All right. I had it in front of me, and now it's gone. I don't know what happened. Anyway, this is Michael Keaton playing, kind of a version of himself. A struggling actor who, used to be in a franchise of movies called Birdman, and has been since he turned down the role in Birdman 4, has been kind of striking out here and there. And now he's trying to make a big comeback by mounting a play on Broadway based on a Raymond Carver novel. Joining him is Edward Norton, who's also kind of playing a version of himself, or at least a version of the self that's often portrayed of him in the press as being very egomaniacal and controlling and hard to work with. Naomi Watts is in this movie as well, and Emma Stone plays Michael Keaton's daughter, who also gets mixed up with Edward Norton, who is, of course, a womanizer. So a lot of this movie is about, acting, what it means to be an actor, what it means to, put yourself into a show and really reveal yourself. But there's also a gimmick to this film in that Iñárritu wants this movie to look like it's one continuous camera take. Obviously, it's not. There's tricks involved in that. Anybody can really see where the little cuts are. But it's still a pretty ambitious thing to tackle, and it's a pretty amazing thing to watch. Because the movie, even though the single take implies real time, the movie doesn't take place in real time. It takes place over the course of a week, I think. And so there's a lot of really interesting transitions in time with that technique. That's a pretty amazing thing to watch. And it's also, I mean, this is also, as much as it is a director's piece, it's also a great actor's piece. Edward Norton seems to be having the most fun he's ever had just playing anything, just sort of making fun of his image and coming up with a character that is just unbelievably, hilariously egomaniacal and unpredictable. But really, the movie belongs to Michael Keaton, who, I mean, this is the definition of a comeback for him in every way. Just not just playing himself or anything like that, but just really putting together a character that I think is more complex than just, you know, an actor having a bad day. The whole movie is just firing on all cylinders here. There's so much to talk about when it's over. There's so many reasons to admire it. There's also, I'm sure there'll be a lot of people who will be put off by it, you know, just sort of being an ego stroke for some of the people involved in it. And, you know, if you're just by describing the plot, it kind of sounds like a Woody Allen movie, but, it's really just an amazing a technical accomplishment and acting accomplishment. Definitely worth seeing.
Okay. Eric.
Yeah, this is one of the best films of the year. And just a little while ago, we talked about four slots and the best actor slot that might be taken up. Well, I'm here to declare that Michael Keaton is already going to win the Oscar for this movie. There's so many things to talk about how great this movie is. When Colin says some detractors might think that the movie might be an ego stroke for the characters and even the director, well, the movie is all about ego. I mean, ego is talking to him from the very first scene of this movie.
Yeah.
And in some respects, Nick, and I think you'll even agree with me, that this is almost like the best movie that Paul Thomas Anderson never made. Mm-hmm. There are sort of elements, just a stretch of this movie that reminded me a lot of Punch Drunk Love. As well as other you know, great accomplishments. But this film, you know, this movie, you know, has a lot to say. This is one of the best movies I've ever seen about actors, not the art of acting, but actors and the egos that they have to sort of create the illusion of art that they're perpetrating, you know, whether it be in theater or on screen. And this movie, you know, it's playing with the whole sort of idea of theatrical acting versus screen acting. And the way there's a hilarious exchange early in the movie where they talk about all these great actors who are now doing superhero movies. That's really quite funny. They put him in a cape? I love that line. But then the movie, you know, when you talk about the gimmick, where it almost looks like this one shot, that gimmick, you know, it's not even fair to be called a gimmick, because that what that's doing is actually sort of making the case that, you know, screen acting can be just as difficult as theatrical acting. It all depends on who's guiding it and who's in front of the camera and behind the camera. Because the way that you're doing these one shots and you have to, you know, hit your marks and all this kind of stuff, it's the same thing as theatrical acting. And like I said, I mean, Collins, or, you know, already talked about how great the performances are. You know, Keaton's extraordinary in this movie. He's absolutely extraordinary. And, you know, we forget a lot, you know, that he's done a lot of dramatic roles in his time. A lot of them have been forgotten about, some for good reason. But this might be the best thing he's ever done, film, performance, everything. And I'm convinced he's going to win the Oscar. This is one of the best films of the year. I can't wait to see it again and again.
Yeah. All right. I'll give you my review, but it's just going to be the same. So just hang on, you guys. We got the news, and then I'll give you my review of Birdman, and we'll catch up on a couple of other movies as well. 312-981-7200 is the phone number, and the news is next. Nick DiGilio here. Hi, everybody. We are live in the Allstate Studio, Showcase Studio, and here till midnight when the lovely Amy Guth will come in and host Red Eye Remix. We are playing some catch-up on movies since we haven't been on in a couple of weeks. And Colin and Eric just reviewed Birdman, and we'll tell you what I think of it as well. Welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
Okay, this is, I think, an extraordinary movie. It's sort of breathtaking to watch, and I think on every level. I love Inarritu's movies. The only one that I wasn't crazy about was Beautiful.
Yeah, me too.
But the rest of them are incredible. And this is a departure for him, you know, both stylistically and the storytelling style, because he kind of... You know, like most of his other movies, they go back and forth in time and tell a bunch of different stories. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And this is it's a different kind of a thing. It's the same cinematographer who did Gravity. I mean, you know, he's probably going to win the Oscar again. You know, I mean, it's just an extraordinary movie, and the way it's set up, the way it's shot, and then just the performances. And you're Eric, you're right. This is probably the best movie I've ever seen about actors. And everything that goes into it, and having done theater for a long time, it's also a very potent movie about theater. And also what we're not really mentioning here, I mean, it's extraordinary. It's a tour de force on every level, and you know, obviously we all root for Michael Keaton. You know what I mean? We're all fans, and this is just like the most satisfying thing as a Michael Keaton fan that you could possibly want. Do you know what I mean? It's just like, if you like Michael Keaton, you're going to be the happiest person in the world after you see this movie. But what we haven't mentioned is how hilarious it is. Because, I mean, it's really funny. Yeah. I mean, there are huge laughs in this movie, and it's a lot funnier than I thought it was going to be. It's certainly the funniest thing that Inarritu has directed.
So, yeah.
I mean, he's not known for the comedies that he does. But boy, oh boy, this is a funny movie and just richly rewarding. And it's about a lot. And like you guys said, after, you know, when it's over, there's a lot to talk about. You know, we're barely scratching the surface here. This is an important film. It's one of the best movies of the year, maybe the best movie I've seen all year. And I loved every second of it, and I can't wait to see it again. And again, Michael Keaton, everybody in this movie is amazing. And you're right, Edward Norton is having a blast in this movie, just having a blast. But everybody's great in it. Zach Galifianakis is great in it. Emma Stone is great in it. And Naomi Watts is great. But it's dominated by Keaton. It's his movie. I mean, he owns it, and he knocks it out of the park. As a Michael Keaton fan, you have to see this movie. It's required. So, Birdman, one of the best movies of the year, without question. All righty then. I can't wait to see it again. How many times have you guys seen it? Just once?
Just once.
Twice.
Oh, you saw it twice, Colin?
Yeah, I went to both screenings.
Ah, okay. All right, yeah. Cool.
And it's definitely worth seeing a second time, because the first time you're watching it, I mean, you're paying a lot of attention, I mean, to everything, but the camera work. And the second time you kind of just let go of that and just concentrate on all the performances and everything else that's going on. And it's definitely worth second and third and fourth viewing.
Yeah. All right. Well, I believe you completely. So, all right. Well, why don't we quickly, Eric, why don't you quickly tell us about the judge?
Okay. Judge stars Robert Downey Jr. as a very powerful, cynical Chicago defense attorney who gets called back home to Indiana when his mom passes away. He has a very strange relationship with his father, played by Robert Duvall, who is a very, very powerful local judge in Indiana. And the night after their mother's funeral, Robert Duvall's character takes a drive, and come next morning he's being accused of hitting someone with his car. And turns out he's going to be on trial for potential manslaughter charges. So Robert Downey's character agrees to defend him, realizing he's not going to get the best defense with the people. And this movie is about them sort of putting their relationship back together, and this all the problems that drove them apart. And this is a film that it tries oh so very hard to want to be so many things, father-son story, murder trial, a Robert Downey getting back in touch with his small town roots story. Vera Farmiga plays his ex girlfriend in the movie. There's a potential incest plot in the movie. There, it has all these sort of things. It's kind of like watching a year's worth of soap operas rolled into 2.5 hours. And yes, I did say 2.5 hours. It's very earnest. You can't fault it for that, certainly, but it's really not very good.
All right, Colin.
Yeah, this is one of those movies that people are going to want to see. Oh, because I love Robert Downey Jr. I love Robert Duvall. It's great. They're doing their usual shtick in this movie, and it doesn't work. Robert Downey Jr., you know, he's doing his usual fast talking thing, and being very witty, and you know that's fun to watch, and you know that's all well and good, but it's wrong for this character, it's wrong for this kind of a film, and Robert Duvall is basically playing his usual, you know, stubborn crotchety old guy who has the last word and you know no nonsense and all that. So they're basically just going through the motions of, you know, their, you know, things that they've done 100 times before. And it's not very interesting. And like Eric said, the script is just kind of all over the place. It's trying to do too many things at once. And it's not very convincing. You know, this is a very earnest film from the guy who wrote The Wedding Crashers. And it's like, you know, just trying a little too hard to, you know, tug at our heartstrings, but not doing it in any sort of convincing way. There's a lot of unmotivated emotions drudged up in a lot of the scenes in this film. So it's very misdirected. The writing isn't very good. And, you know, the performances are just kind of, you know, standard. So, yeah, not a very good film at all.
Yeah, God, is it long? Oh,
yeah.
I still think the showtime I went to was still running.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's always fun to watch these guys. You know, I mean, everybody in this movie is good. You know, it's loaded with a great cast. You know, and Blair from Gossip Girl is in it. So right there. But it's overstuffed. I mean, there are things about it that I like. I actually think that the courtroom sequences in the movie are pretty decent. I think that's the best stuff in the movie takes place in the courtroom. All the domestic stuff doesn't work. But I, you know, some of the stuff in the courtroom I thought was well handled. But it's, I mean, it goes on forever. And like you said, Robert Downey Jr. and Robert Duvall are doing this in their sleep, you know? So a pretty uninteresting movie and a really odd entry from a director whose, you know, work in the past is nowhere near what this is, you know? So, yeah, not good. Not good. All right, let's see. Colin, tell us about St. Vincent.
All right, well, this is with Bill Murray, also playing a crotchety old man, not no-nonsense guy, who lives by himself. Well, not by himself. He has a cat. And, you know, his days are filled by just going to the bar and going to the track and losing his money and trying to figure out how to make rent. Eventually, he has a new next door neighbor, in the form of Melissa McCarthy, who's a single mom, and, her son, who's a little 8-year-old kid who's kind of a loner, who is put in the care of Bill Murray's character rather reluctantly by his mom because she can't really find a babysitter, on the spur of the moment. And as you can probably guess, the two of them strike an unlikely friendship. It sort of kind of turns into about a boy, but with a much older guy and the guy who's kind of down on his luck instead of having everything. The movie's, you know, it's fairly predictable. But it's one of those movies where you know where it's going, the actors in it are so charming and likable and watchable, and you know Murray seems to be engaged in what he's doing, that you kind of just go along with it anyway. You know, you can nitpick the script to death about, you know, how there's some things that happen that, you know, aren't really convincing. There's some things that Melissa McCarthy's character puts up with that I don't think a lot of people would put up with as easily as she does. But I found myself just kind of going with it because there's Bill Murray has this way of, you know, he puts a good vibe on the film that you just kind of want to see where his character is going to go next. So I recommend this movie. It's not great, but there's enough good qualities in it from the performances and the characters. Oh, I forgot. Naomi Watts is really terrific in this as Bill Murray's sort of long-suffering Russian girlfriend, semi-girlfriend. This is not a great movie, but a good movie, kind of worth seeing.
Okay. Eric, what do you think?
Yeah, I like it too, and this is sort of the very definition of a crowd pleaser that sort of works, despite its flaws. The film that I think when it tries to really take these sort of dramatic turns in the movie, it reminded me a lot of Nebraska, sort of a poor man's version of Nebraska, if you will, and sort of the parallels of the Bill Murray and the Bruce Dern characters in both of those movies. But Bill Murray, he's one of those guys that's, very watchable, pretty much always watchable. I think the kid is really good in the movie. If the kid wasn't any good, this movie would probably be a lot more insufferable than it, possibly could have been. But it's not. It works. I think, there's some late second act stuff that happens that I don't think is very convincing. But by the time it rolls around towards its climax, the climax got me. I can't deny that. The climax got me. Maybe because I thought it was sort of the perfect tribute to Bill Murray himself. But that's okay. This is a crowd pleaser, and that I'm fine with that.
Yeah, I'm with you guys. It's not great, but it's carried by great performances. Like everybody in the movie is really, really good. And what can you say about Bill Murray, man? This is Bill Murray in his element. You know what I mean? Like this is a part that is perfect for Bill Murray, and he knows how to play it, and he plays it really well. And the relationship between him and the kid is really nice. And Naomi Watts is hilarious. She's really good. It's her second best. It's her second good performance in the week, she's really good in it. And everybody, I think everybody's great in this. But it's Bill Murray. If you're a Bill Murray fan, you got to see it. It's Bill Murray doing what Bill Murray does and doing it great. I think so. All right, guys, hang on. We got one more movie. Time for one more movie. Which one do you guys think we should review?
Whiplash.
Ooh. Whiplash.
What have you seen?
I've seen Whiplash.
Oh, well, let's talk about that then.
All right, hang on. Everybody hang on. Hold on. Hold on. We'll come back. We'll talk about Whiplash right here on 720 WGN. All right. We got to get back into this. We've only got a couple of minutes here. We only got a few minutes. It's the movie reviews, and Colin and Eric are here. And, Eric, why don't you tell us about Whiplash?
Okay, this movie is a big hit from Sundance this year, and it stars Miles Teller as a young man who was very passionate about becoming a jazz drummer. He practices all the time, and he's in music school, and he gets a chance one day to be in sort of the most prestigious class in the music school, and it's run by a teacher played by J.K. Simmons. And when anyone ever wants to describe precisely what this character is like in the movie, the first person they come up with is Arlie Ermey in Full Metal Jacket. This is a character that is unflinching in the way that he teaches his students. He will not tolerate failure. He will not tolerate even an inkling of anything, below perfection. And the way he drives his students to be the best that they could possibly be and even be better than the last people that took those seats is really riveting and also incredibly hard to watch at times. This movie is both exhilarating and very uncomfortable at times, especially if you've ever had any sort of teacher or maybe even a boss like J.K. Simmons' character. I've never been the biggest Miles Teller fan in the world, but this is sort of a role that perfectly matches, I think, the sort of the persona that he's had, and I think this is the best performance he's given to date. And J.K. Simmons, who we've praised many times on the show, does maybe gives one of his best performances, maybe his best performance ever. The music in this movie is tremendous. The music scenes are tremendous. It all leads up to one of those sort of those perfect endings that hits you know, literally the right beat to go out on. This is very few movies recently have been as alive as this movie has, and it was an absolute joy to watch, and I really loved it.
Okay, Colin.
This is my favorite movie of the year so far. I absolutely love this movie. I echo Eric, everything Eric just said. This is, you know, the guy who directed this, Damien Chazelle. I'd never seen anything he's done before, but I've since seen his first film, Madeline and what's his name, on a park bench. And, you know, that's a good movie, but it does not signal what's to come from this director with this film. It is an amazing directorial effort. The editing, the cinematography is extraordinary. I just kind of sat there going, who is this? Who made this? And, you know, Miles Teller is great in it. It's his best performance, I agree. And J.K. Simmons, you know, he's one of those actors we've sort of taken for granted over the years. You know, we always praise his work and everything. He shows up as, you know, doing a character bit here and there. It's always good to see him, but it's so great to see him give this kind of performance and really just own a whole movie. He's definitely somebody I'm rooting for this you know, award season. And I was blown away by this movie from beginning to end. And I cannot wait to see it again. It's great.
Yeah, I'm with you guys on this one. I think it's one of the best movies of the year. I'm a Miles Teller fan. I know, Eric, you're not, but I think he's great in this. And you're right. I think it's a perfect vehicle for him. The music is amazing. The way it's shot is unbelievable. And, I mean, you know, what can you say about J.K. Simmons? What a performance, man. I mean, good Lord. And it's perfectly titled.
Yes.
You know what I mean? I mean, my God. But yeah, J.K. Simmons, he just knocks it out of the park. He's, you know, we've talked about him before. He can do anything, man.
Yep.
You know, because he's hilarious. He's funny on those. I don't care. I like the insurance commercials that he's on. That's how much I like J.K. Simmons. And this is just a treat to watch. And he's going to get nominated for supporting actor. There's just no question about it.
Agreed.
I mean, if he doesn't, then there's something wrong with the world. So, but I thought this movie was great. If you're a musician, you'll love it. I mean, if you just want to be entertained, it's a very entertaining movie. And sometimes, like you said, Eric, it's a little uncomfortable.
Yeah. So,
but that's the purpose. That's the whole reason. And you know, musicians will, I think musicians are, this is going to be added to, you know, the short list of great movies that musicians will love.
And I think teachers should see it too.
Yeah. I agree. And, you know, I play the drums, so it was it was pretty insane to watch.
I hope
this
they
movie.
Were in tune.
Yeah.
Yeah, the right tempo there.
That's right, man. Yep. All right. Whiplash.
Right tempo.
Whiplash is playing at a few theaters here. I think it's playing like 10 or 11 theaters in the city, and we all three of us highly, highly recommend it. All right, what do we got next week?
We got Big Hero 6, the Disney Marvel production, and a little movie called Interstellar.
Oh, yeah.
Next week.
Oh, yeah. I think you might be looking forward to that one.
I think I am.
Yeah. All right. So Interstellar is our big one next week, and we'll talk about that. All right, guys. We got a full show next week, so we'll do it all again.
Cool.
See you guys. Take care.
Bye.
There's Eric. There's Colin. And they are with us every Saturday night reviewing movies. We'll take a quick break. The lovely Amy Guth and Red Eye Remix is coming up next.